So today we're talking about restorative practices and restorative justice and what it has to do with our lives. I didn't say my pronouns. My name again is Jessica, Reverend Jessica James, and my pronouns are she, her, hers. So before we begin, let's take two or three deep breaths together. In and out. And in, and let it out. Let's let our shoulders drop down, let our jaw unclench a little bit. Friends, we live in a world where conflict feels like it's everywhere. There are conflict zones around the globe. We just came out of a very long government shutdown. There's political strife, family tension, work disputes, and traffic jams. I wonder, hearing that list, how does your body feel? Do you feel any tightness? Do your ears, your shoulders move up near your ears? Conflict can feel stressful. But I have three things when I'm talking about restorative justice, three takeaways that I hope you'll leave with today. And the first is that conflict is morally neutral. It's not good or bad, it just is. The second is that isolation leads to disconnection. And the third is that connection is the response to solving conflict. So this conflict, I'm trying to think of an example of morally neutral conflict, because we, in the reading we talked about in the book that we listened to this morning, we heard that we impact one another just by getting up, just by moving through our day. When I lived in Connecticut most recently, when we were moving into our apartment building, there was a big building under construction next door. And the supervisor of the building said, oh, it'll be done before you move in. I think it may be done now. We moved out in May this summer. So while they were doing this construction, they had the big, bars, the metal bars, if you can imagine it, and like a roof overhead over the sidewalk to keep things from falling down, you know, as people were walking through on the sidewalk. And that they had big concrete buckets, buckets full of concrete that those metal bars were in. So that took the sidewalk, you know, from enough space for two people who don't know each other to walk past, down to just like a really tight single file line. So it was also a really long block that this building was being built on. And there's no way, you know, you just kind of look down as you're about to go, oh, can I fit? Am I gonna make it? I don't know. You don't see anybody else coming in yet. All right, I'm going for it. I'm walking, so next to a busy road. But somebody else comes in on the end while you're halfway through the middle. What do we do? What are we gonna do in this situation? We both have to pass. This is a sort of a little example. I remember being in this situation, like, here I am in conflict with this stranger, just to walk down the sidewalk. You know, who's gonna move? Is it, does it have to do with our socioeconomic standing, power? Who will shift first? Do we play chicken? What goes on? But nobody started out wanting to be in conflict with a person on the other side of the sidewalk. We're just trying to make our way through our day. We're just trying to get from point A to point B. And although most of the conflicts in our lives feel like there is, our values are attached to them, that's true. There's so much, there can be so much pain, there can be so much at stake. I just want to invite you just to, you know, let that percolate a little bit this morning, that conflict, it just exists. It simply is. Conflict is not a failure. It's not an emergency. Conflict is not a sign that something has gone terribly wrong. Conflict is simply that friction that happens whenever two human beings with different needs, different stories, and different ways of being try to share space. And so our question is not how do we eliminate conflict? The question is, what do we do next? We heard this reading from Susan Raffo.
Thank you, Trudith.
And She says in the same in her same book, there is no essential right way to do anything. There is only relationship, connection, being present with what is happening, and then determining the next step. And restorative practices help us determine that next step. When we think of restorative justice, we can often think of the worst case scenario right away. And I can share stories with you about, yes, restorative justice can certainly be an alternative to the carceral system. It can be a way of repairing harm that's been done in very egregious crimes and harms and hurts. But what I'm interested in learning about myself and teaching is, how do we live these practices in our interactions as Unitarian Universalists every day? How do we embody them throughout these morally neutral conflicts that just exist by us moving through our lives, so that when it comes to those conflicts and situations that make our shoulders rise up and our jaws clench, what if they're already just part of our ways of being? We heard this wonderful story that Anne shared about Wally and Freya, this restorative justice parable. And in that story, it seemed like a child situation of someone writing a beautiful story, someone else destroying it and coloring all over it. Wally harms Freya by taking her beloved book and covering it with these drawings of monsters. And the kids just don't want to deal with it. Just go away, Wally. Just go away. When someone, I have a goal, I know what I want to go to, and somebody is getting in the way of that, it's so easy to just say, you know what? I don't have time for this. Go away. Those of us who are focused on what is at hand, we are going to do what needs to be done, and those who are distractors, go away. We jump to blame, sometimes punishment, because we think that will restore equilibrium. But Freya does something else. She follows Wally. She sees him and she listens. And what emerges there is a connection, not perfection, not closure, just enough. And this is what Susan Raffo and Marcy Rendon teach us. Before a community can take action together, they must attend to the harm that exists between them. When harm can be a really loaded word, and I wonder if we can think of it as just the impacts. We sit with the impacts, the ways they've hurt and been hurt, until there's enough connection for a we to emerge. And Susan Raffo says, imagine if this were our family practice, our community practice, our neighborhood practice. There's so much work to be done. There's so much broken in the world and so many hurts that we want to heal. We gather together as Unitarian Universalists to bring the healing of our life-giving faith to the world. But imagine if we, before we jumped into the mutual aid and the action, to the capital campaign, to the housing crisis, what if we said, first we must attend to us. There's nothing that anybody has done wrong, or there's no bad intentions, but here's how I have impacted you. Here's how I have disappeared or gotten overwhelmed. Imagine the spaciousness that might open. In the United States, we have a lot of rugged individualism. When we think about conflict being wrong or shameful, sometimes that leads to the second takeaway that I have, that isolation leads to disconnection. This culture that we have is saturated with rugged individualism. I've got it. I don't need help. I can handle it. Let me just take care of this and then I can move on to whatever you want to do. Have you ever asked someone for help and they responded, let me just check my Google Calendar and maybe between 7:15 and 7:20 on Wednesday evening, I might be able to stop by. Time feels like something that we're always running out of. We overestimate and underestimate how much time things are going to take. Taking the time like when Wally and Freya did, like that great song that played, I didn't get hear that for the first time, the restorative justice song in the front, but talked about circles as a place for healing. Taking time, there are particular practices that some of you may already know and practice. When there's a conflict that is getting in the way, we're going to sit down in circle, we're going to listen deeply to one another, we're going to share deeply, everyone's going to get equal time. There's no hierarchy. What that is just slowing down, not forever, just long enough to be human with each other. And you may not fix the hurt, the impact, or even finish clearing the air. And we might give in to that sense of the demand on our time, the urgency, and the disconnection that comes with that. But I invite you to consider that things, that work is not wasted, even if the problem doesn't feel solved. That this is the most important work, the work of sitting down and being fully present with those who are within our arm's reach. The connection is not the opposite of conflict. Connection is how we heal conflict. Connection is how we move through it. Relationships aren't always easy. They're complex and difficult. And connection doesn't have to mean a 3-hour circle. Connection can be small. Connection can be inviting someone to join us on a task that we normally do alone, to get back into the practice of just being alongside people. Grocery shopping, walking the dog, raking leaves. I want to invite us to just try to think of one thing this week that we could do with someone else. Not to get it done faster or more efficiently, but just to remember that you're not alone. Those small acts build muscle. They build muscle that help us to learn and to embody more restorative practices for handling conflict together. It's like strength training for our empathy and compassion. So now that we've just kind of touched a little bit on conflict is not good or bad, on connection and disconnection, what is restorative justice, really? Do we have anybody in here who is in part of the legal system? Any lawyers or judges? Any law enforcement? No? All right, everybody relax. Everything's good. Yeah. Restorative justice is an alternative worldview about focus, recognizing that harm has happened. Someone has been hurt, harm has been caused, and harm has been experienced. And we hear a lot about restorative justice in schools, but it's not simply a tactic of education when two kids get in a fight at school. It's also not just a special protocol reserved for serious harm. It is a world view. It's a way of seeing that people are more than the worst thing they've done. That relationships are central, repair is possible, and that we belong to one another. Has anyone here experienced a restorative justice circle? Yeah, I see it's nodding. Or how about this? Has anyone experienced harm? Yeah, Okay. Has anyone been arrested? Yeah, I see some heads nodding. I ask those questions to remind us that this is here in our midst. Our experiences with the legal, the criminal justice system, our experiences with alternatives, it's not an abstract idea. This is something that we run into in our lives. And the way that we respond to it is deeply, can be deeply, excuse me, aligned with Unitarian Universalism. Because our faith affirms the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. Every human being. Even the ones who take our storybooks and draw monsters all over the pages. Even the ones who cut off food benefits to children. It's an aspiration, right? It's not something that comes easy. It's like how love is an action and not a feeling. A restorative worldview that things can be repaired, that we are not identified with the harms that we cause, is completely contrary to the system that we have here in the United States. We call people ex-convicts, you know? Justice, and even the nice words like justice-involved people, involved with the justice system. And these idea that in order to get fair representation, in order to have a trial, right, you have to accept a charge, plead not guilty to it. There isn't, from the very beginning, there isn't a way to say, yes, I recognize that I have caused harm. I recognize that I hurt you. We have to distance ourselves from that just to get the fair process, the due process and representation that we depend on here in our country. Just a little seed to plant there. And from that point, we can have a punishment and serve our time. Our punishment is again, our crime is against the state sometimes, instead of against the person that we may have caused direct harm to. And there may not be any interaction, whether that is because of sometimes there's protection orders, sometimes it's not safe for there to be interaction. But the system is set up such that there is a course that carries on without the person or people or community that has been harmed. And then we put people away outside of our community where they're not interacting, where they're not contributing, where they're not repairing the harm that they caused. Separate them completely. And then people come home. And in my work in my ministry, I've seen the difficulty that people have in coming home and the way that the system is stacked against them and the ways in which they hope to try to repair their relationships and rebuild their lives again. But we used to have an idea of, I served my time. But now I am, and maybe it's been this way for a long time, but I haven't heard that I did my time in a while. What I hear is those who feel like they have a mark on them when they are trying to get housing, get a job, rebuild connections, become a part of the community again. There's not very many places where people can bring their fullest selves, where they're completely welcomed as who they are, as a human being. Now, there are these great breaks, and we as a society are trying to figure out how to harm these great breaks. But those things begin in relationship and in with small decisions and interactions throughout our days. And friends, we're all capable of all things given the right circumstances. So when we're looking at ourselves as full human beings and looking at people who are identified by a terrible, terrible act that they have done, we lean into the teaching of our faith, of Unitarian Universalism, that teaches us that the interdependent web of all existence means that we all depend on each other, even when we wish that someone wasn't in that web. The interdependent web of existence is the opposite of rugged individualism. We're ecosystems, not islands. And when we truly begin to live as people who believe in this interdependent web, our lives can be woven more tightly with others. That weaving, that commitment to care, that's what's going to help us topple the empire, not with force, with mutuality, and with our bodies grounded. Adrienne Marie Brown writes, "When I feel hopeless, it usually means my attention is on things I cannot touch. When I bring my attention to the people and places I can touch, my life fills with meaning, connection, joy, and transformation." This is the fundamental restorative practice that I hope that we can all leave with today. Turning our attention back to what we can touch, to the problems we can shape, to the relationships we can repair, to hyper-local connections, listening to our own needs, admitting that we have them, being real people with one another, not just opinions or polarizing ideas, but letting go of the myth that we can make it alone. Community, friends, is just people trying to make sense of their lives together. As you move through your week, as we all move through, breathing and stumbling, trying and repairing, I invite you to reflect on some things that we've shared together this morning. That among us are people who have experienced harm of all kinds. That among us are people who have worked on restoring and repairing harm. And the three takeaways that I really try to boil this down to. Number one, conflict is morally neutral. It simply is. Number two, isolation leads to disconnection. And three, connection, seeing one another, really seeing one another. That's the response to conflict. Most of us won't have the opportunity to have a great impact on a global conflict zone, to end wars, though we may have that in our prayers and our hopes. Our hopes for our children and our grandchildren, for our communities, the longing that we have for peace. But what we can do is reach out and see what is within our arm's length. And then we can lean into that connection and mutuality. We can lean into a spaciousness that leaves room for justice and love in action. That action of love doesn't always feel good, but it's an action that we can take with everyone. From the person who microwaves fish in the office at work, parks in front of our driveway, to people who actually make big decisions in our lives that affect the actual ability to live of our fellow humans. But every day, there's something that we can do. We can't do everything, but each of us can do something. And finding that something, that action, that act of love, we can refuse to live the lie of rugged individualism. We can weave our lives together more tightly. We can take the time that it takes. Harm, and particularly those who benefit from harm, depend on us to feel like we're out of time. Like I don't have time, I have to focus on this. There's always another emergency, always another dumpster fire to attend to. Sometimes the whole world is on fire. We can resist that and take a restorative stance by stopping, seeing the people sitting next to us, the people in the room with us, trying to understand what their lives are really like. Invite them into things more than just, maybe more than just coming to church, but in completing drudgery, you know, chores and tasks together, but trying to be proximate a little bit more to the people that we call our community. And as you move through, and remember that there is not a perfect right way to do things. There's not a handout of restorative justice that I can give you that if you follow, all your conflicts will be magically solved. How we wish. But there is a stance, a way of being that fits right in with our values of love right at the center as Unitarian Universalists. So I invite you, may we trust our senses. May we stay present with what is. And when we choose that next step, ask for help. If we don't have the ability to make a response that reflects our deepest values, lean into your community and ask for help. Let it wait. Let things sit. Bring your full self, because nobody else can replace you. And we need all of us to make it. May it be so, and amen.